Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Krishnam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udireyat Nastapra Yeshu Abhadrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. After the Bhagavatam reading, I'll talk a little about Rukmini's appearance day, Rukmini Devi, and some of the devotees have asked me, senior devotees here, to talk a little about something about New Dwarka, its history. So I guess since I'm a bit of an antique, it's appropriate to do a little of that today. So we're reading from the second canto, third chapter, ninth text. Raja Kamo Anun Devan Niditim Kavicharan Yajet Kama Kamo Yajet Somam Kama Purusham Param Raja Kamo Manun Devan Raja Kamo Manun Devan Raja Kamo Manun Devan Raja Kamo Manun Devan Niritim Tvabicharan Yajet Niritim Tvabicharan Yajet Nibitim Tvabicharan Yajet Nibitim Tvabicharan Yajet Kamo Kamo Yajet Somam Kama Kamo Yajet Somam Kama Kamo Yajet Somam Kama Kamo Yajet Somam Akama Purusham Param Akama Purusham Param Akama Purusham Param Akama Purusham Param Raja Kamo Manundevan Nidhitim Tvabicharan Yajet Kamo Kamo Yajet Somam Kama Purusham Param
Raja Kamo Manukevan
Ladies?
Raja Kamo
Manundevan, Niritim Tvabicharan Yajet,
Niritim tocharam yeje. Kama kama yeje somam. Kama purusham param. Raja kama marundevam. Nitin tabi charan yeje. Kamo kamo yeje somam. Kamo purusham param. Raja kama. Anyone desiring an empire or kingdom. Manun, the Manus, semi-incarnations of God. Devan, demigods. Niritim, demons. Vijaran, desiring victory over the enemy. Yajet, should worship. Kamakama, one who desires sense gratification. Yajet, should worship. Somam, demigod named Chandra. Akama, one who has no material desires to be fulfilled. Purusham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param, the Supreme. Translation. These are translations and purports by Srila Prabhupada. That melody that I was singing was something that Prabhupada taught the devotees here in New Dwarka some time ago. And I thought it was kind of an interesting melody. I think it was in 1968, but there was a tape in the archives which I had them send me, in which he says, this tune is very nice, so I know it's a little simple from what we usually chant, but I thought it would be nice to just to sing it, because you like it. So this translation by Srila Prabhupada. One who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. One who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Responsibly, one who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. For a liberated person, all the enjoyments listed above are considered to be absolutely useless. Only those who are conditioned by the material mode's external energy are captivated by different types of material enjoyment. In other words, the transcendentalist has no material desires to be fulfilled, whereas the materialist has all types of desires to be fulfilled. The Lord has proclaimed that the materialists who desire material enjoyment and thus seek the favor of different demigods, as above mentioned, are not in control of their senses and so give themselves to nonsense. One should therefore not desire any sort of material enjoyment, being sensible enough to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The leaders of nonsensical persons are still more nonsensical because they preach openly and foolishly that one can worship any form of demigod and get the same result. This sort of preaching is not only against the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita or those of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's also foolish, just as it is foolish to claim that with the purchase of any travel ticket, one may reach the same destination. No one can reach Bombay from Delhi by purchasing a ticket for Baroda. It is clearly defined herein that persons impregnated with different desires have different modes of worship. But one who has no desire for material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. And this worshiping process is called devotional service. Pure devotional service means service to the Lord without any tinge of material desires, including desire for fruitive activity and empiric speculation. For fulfillment of material desires, one may worship the Supreme Lord, but the result of such worship is different, as will be explained in the next verse. Generally, the Lord does not fulfill anyone's material desire for sense enjoyment, but He awards such benedictions to worshipers of the Lord, for they ultimately come to the point of not desiring material enjoyment. The conclusion is that one must minimize the desires for material enjoyment, and for this one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described here as Param, or beyond anything material. Shripad Shankaracharya has also stated, Narayana Parak Vyakta, the Supreme Lord is beyond the material encirclement. Vrajakamo Manum Devan Niritim Tavicharan Yajet Kama Kamo Yajet Somam Akama Purusham Param. One who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What time does this class end? 8:15, is it? Okay, usual. So, Prabhupada here refers to, in his purport, the next verse, which is the famous verse of Kama Sarva Kama Va Moksha Karma Udarati Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param, which is similar to this verse in that it recommends that everyone should worship the Supreme Lord, even if there are material desires investing or infecting the heart of such a person. And ultimately, through the process of Yajeta, or worship, that one would come to the point of pure devotional service. So whatever it is, the idea is not to worship any lesser servants of the Lord, but to worship the Lord directly, even if one has material desires. Dhruva Maharaj was worshiping the Supreme Lord to gain a kingdom. But when he met the Lord personally after great penances and austerities, he said, and Prabhupada quotes this very often, that I have no desire anymore for anything material. I was looking for broken pieces of glass, but now you have come, and you are the supreme, topmost jewel of the whole universe. And so he felt completely satisfied. This is an indication of someone who may go for some material reason to the Supreme Lord, but instead of going to lesser demigods for material benedictions, somehow or other is fortunate enough to worship the Supreme Lord, and then is clear. Is purified of all material desires and comes to the supreme loving position of wanting nothing more for oneself than to love the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada is condemning here, from the very beginning of his purport, all worship of lesser beings than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and recommends that doing so, to worship lesser gods, is foolishness. He uses the word foolishness. And there was a song that said something like, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. So it's very common that people think that by worshiping any form of worship, or any god, or semi-god, or demigod, or any name, or anything, because everything is part of God, or everything is one with God, that they will ultimately get God. And while there's some truth in that, Prabhupada has told us that there's a direct route and an indirect route. And an indirect route is fraught with many difficulties. One is going up the stairway and one is taking the elevator or the lift. One can immediately go. So bhakti yoga includes all of the steps, all the roundabout ways of reaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So pure devotional service then is distinguishing, and has many times distinguished, and Rupa Goswami has distinguished, from impure or mixed devotional service. Devotional service that is infested or infected with jnana or karma or yoga is not pure devotional service. Anya bilashita sunyam, jnana karma. It's said that both jnana and karma and yoga, jnana karma, what is it, vijanyatam, is imperfect or impure. And therefore, Rupa Goswami recommends that one come to the point of pure devotional service. And it is said in English that it is better to give than to receive. So in spiritual life, that is even more appropriate, that to want nothing in return but the service of the Lord is the highest perfection that one can achieve. Prabhupada says that for fulfillment of material desires, one may worship the Supreme Lord, but the result of such worship is different, as will be explained in the next verse. So it is different, and this kind of leads into the story of Rukmini Devi. So we're very honored. It's a very auspicious day to be celebrating her appearance day, and the altar is very beautifully decorated, the deities with their flower outfits, and beautifully decorated singhasans. It's very auspicious. So when Rukmini, as was the custom in Kshatriya families, going to worship the Durga, Durga is one of the demigods that were recommended by Shankara to be worshipped in the Panchopasana form of worship. Actually recommended any demigods, but specifically Durga was one of them. Durga, Surya, Ganesh, Shiva, and Vishnu were the five main ones he usually recommended and usually worshipped. And many of these demigods are still worshipped. So as she was proceeding to the temple, she had heard that the Brahmin she had sent to meet Krishna had come to her and told her of the good fortune that Krishna had actually come up to the kingdom of Vidarbha, which is a long ways from where Krishna was, located in Dwarka, about 1,000 miles, Prabhupada writes. And he came overnight in his chariot by his horses. And that works out to they were traveling about 100 miles per hour. Pretty fast for horses. So she was informed that Krishna was actually present in Vidarbha and in the kingdom of Bhishmaka. And she was very pleased. But when she was going, following the family routine, to worship the goddess Durga, she was going to worship in terms of wanting Krishna, not just to get any husband, which many young girls worship Katyayani, sometimes they went to Durga for worship, but to want Krishna. So that was not an ordinary desire. To want Krishna as one's husband, to want Krishna as one's sole object of worship was not an ordinary desire. So she was actually praying to Durga for that kind of worship, not the worship that she just have a good husband, that she should have Krishna as her husband. So she was actually entering into pure devotional service. So the story goes that Rukmini was originally meant to be marrying Krishna. She had very extraordinary beauty. Sometimes she's described as black-eyed. Sometimes her eyes are described as blue, bluish. And she was so beautiful that when the princes came to marry her, some became smitten with her beauty. They became even unconscious. They were so taken with her extraordinary beauty. So she was to marry Krishna, but somehow or other, her brother Rukmi decided it was better for her to marry Shishupal. So because of Krishna's absence and various other reasons, this marriage to Shishupal was being arranged. And all detailed arrangements were being made, were very detailed. Lots of ceremony, lots of ritual, lots of gorgeous, fantastic worship was being organized. And many people came for that wedding ceremony. And of course, it was their principle to go to the temples to worship. So Rukmini was very desirous to worship Krishna. And as you know, she wrote a very beautiful letter saying that she only wanted to worship him. She had been desiring him from the beginning, that she had no desire to marry anyone else, that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and maybe he wasn't worthy. But this is indicative of how important it is in the tradition of Vedic literature, and especially in our Sampradaya, to write. Prabhupada used to ask his devotees to write something every day, even if you just write a few lines or a few pages, so that our absorption of Krishna consciousness isn't entirely passive, but there is an active preaching dimension to our absorption of Krishna consciousness. So she wrote this extraordinary letter, and she sent it with a Brahmin, a reputed Brahmin, who went to Krishna and read this beautiful dissertation. And on hearing it, Krishna said, actually, just as she has been thinking about me, I have been thinking about her. And I will not let her marry Shishupala. I'll intervene. I'll kidnap her, as was the custom of Kshatriyas, and bring her back to Dwarka. So he assured the Brahmin that this is what he was planning to do. Because there is always reciprocation between Krishna and his devotees. Ye tamam prabhajante tam tataiva vajamiham mama bart manuvartante manusha parta sarvashad. It's said in the Bhagavad Gita that exactly as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So since her surrender was not 20%, in which you would get a 20% return of blessings from Krishna, it was 100%. So she was getting 100% reciprocation from Krishna. Yes, I will come. to the kingdom of Vidarbha, and I will marry Rukmini. So this message was entrusted to the Brahmin. So Rukmini was preparing because, as she said in her letter, time is very short, and the Brahmin mentioned that if you're going to do anything, the letter was written for Krishna's consideration. It wasn't that you have to do this, you have to do that. It's not the proper way to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but you please consider this plea. So the Brahmin, before departing, said that if you will consider this, then you have to act quickly because the marriage is going to take place in a day, tomorrow. So Krishna assured him that he would. But he hadn't reached the kingdom of Vidarbha, and Rukmini was about to get married to Shishupal, and she became very frightened, and she shed tears, and she was thinking that maybe she was offensive in her letter, maybe she offended the demigods because she didn't worship Lord Shiva and Lord Rama very much. She was really attached to worshiping Krishna, and that maybe because of some offense that they were angry upon her, and that Krishna had been influenced by them and decided not to come. So it was very, very difficult. It's said in the Bhagavad Gita also that only people who are of lesser intelligence, kamast haistu, hiritagana, worship other demigods. They're of a lower being. Their desires are stolen away by Maya. So she was considering that all this demigod worship is not really the highest form of worship, but she was going through with it and praying to Krishna all the time, thinking that even if he didn't come, somehow or other, she would pray and pray and pray. So she was crying and praying, and as she was returning from the Durga temple back to the palace, and all the princes had assembled there, Shishupala was there, and Damaghosh was there, and they had huge armies, because they had heard, actually, there was a rumor going around that Krishna might come and kidnap Rukmini, who was kind of being underplayed. So they came with big armies to fight if necessary. And then Balaram also came with his army, and there was they were prepared. So when Rukmini was on her way back to the palace, she saw Krishna, and she'd never actually seen him before, but she'd heard about him. And somehow there's a kind of intuitive understanding that went on, that this is Krishna. She saw him and she recognized him somehow or other by descriptions of him that this was Krishna. Of course, Krishna's unique. He's blue and very beautiful, and somehow she knew it was Krishna. And so all of a sudden she became pacified in heart that she was going to be saved. So anyway, I don't want to prolong this, but as I remember, she was taken on board Krishna's chariot by Krishna, and he slowly departed, because he was so confident that he was going to defeat the opposing armies. So a big fight ensued, and Damaghosha's armies were taken. And then Rukmini tried to follow and vowed that he would capture Krishna and kill this impudent cowherd boy who had taken his sister away. So he followed with his army, and he said now to Krishna, turn around and fight, because now I'm going to kill you. And Krishna destroyed all of his weapons. He brought out one bow and Krishna broke the string. He brought another bow and Krishna broke the string. He brought another bow, Krishna fired an arrow and broke that string. And then all of his arrows were shattered. And then his clubs and swords and maces were all shattered. And he was completely defeated. And when he came with his sword, that was shattered to pieces. So Krishna disfigured him by cutting parts of his mustache and his hair away. And he was about to kill him when Rukmini pleaded that, please don't kill him, he's my older brother, it wouldn't be right. And she was crying and pleading. And then Balaram came to, and Krishna said, okay, I won't. But he can't go back, he has to follow his vow, he can't go back to Vidarbha, he has to leave and go somewhere else, which he did. And then Balaram pacified her and said that, you know, we're not this body, we shouldn't be so attached to our family, our bodily relatives and so on. So she became pacified. And then Krishna brought her back to Dwarka. And as the saying goes, it lived happily ever after. So when Prabhupada was here, he named these deities Rukmini Dwarkadish, and because it's on the western shore of the ocean, which is where Dwarka is situated, that's part of the reason why he called this temple New Dwarka, and the deities Rukmini and Dwarkadish. So they're worshipped, and they lived very affluently and very opulently, as we're worshipping them today. Actually, I was in England when this temple was acquired, and it had been a Methodist church, and Prabhupada sent me a photograph, a color photograph of the outside of the building. And I thought, well, this is really wonderful, beautiful columns, nice Doric
Romanesque style architecture, and he was very, very happy to have his temple, so much so that he sent a picture of it. And I think that Prabhupada spent more time in this temple than any place else, at least in the United States, and he gave lectures here. This was always considered the temple that had the best deity worship of any temple. It was the standard, well looked after, well managed, and he asked the devotees all over the world to come here and learn how to worship the deities, how to manage the temple. And so it was always, he used to call it the Western World Headquarters. One time he had a letterhead that had a line drawing, right, of this temple, International Society of Krishna Consciousness, Western World Headquarters. So it's very fortunate. It's still the most dynamic temple, in, at least in the United States, maybe the world. And so many high standards are being maintained here and making new devotees, nice Harinams. It's always very wonderful to come back. I went overseas before this temple was acquired, but I remember when we first recorded the Hare Krishna record, there it was played in this temple, and there was a big controversy going on because Govinda Madhi Purusham was led by a woman, and so we heard that this wasn't going to be very pleasing to Prabhupada. So some of you have read the story of how Prabhupada reacted, and I think it's in Dhanavir Maharaja's book. And when I don't know if, was that Govinda Madhi Purusham sung before the record came? There was something when the deities were greeted. I don't know what happened before that. At any rate, Prabhupada asked that record be played here in the temple, and the devotees were a little astounded that it be played. Anyway, it was played, and Prabhupada was very ecstatic. He shed tears, and he was... and he said that it should be played everywhere, all the temples, which it is all over the world now, when the deities are greeted. So when we heard that, we were kind of fearful about this whole thing, you know, after all this effort, that Prabhupada wouldn't like it. And it was a real serious fear that we had. And then we heard that he accepted it, and we were very, very relieved that he not only accepted it, but he recommended it be played over and over again, Govinda Madhi Purusham. So one of the things that happened when I came to New Dwarka in 1976 was I came in August, and in October, late October, Rameshwar was the presiding personality at that time. I was staying over in the Brown building, and he said that, he called on the phone, and he said that Kula Priya has been kidnapped. And I said, "What do you mean kidnapped? How do you kidnap a devotee, or what does it mean?" And then he told me about this deprogramming phenomenon that was going on. I heard a little bit about it, but not too much. And so we have to go over right away and see about this. So if you don't mind, I'll just tell this little story, because it's kind of an interesting story. There was a devotee here named Kula Priya, who's in Denver now, and what happened was that she was engaged to be married to another devotee named Sri Kanta. So she told her parents, Luke and Pasadena, that she was going to be married to another devotee named Sri Kanta. So the parents thought didn't like the idea that she was in the temple anyway. She was a devotee. And this was the last straw, that she was going to marry a devotee. She was probably 20 or 21, or maybe a little less, but legal. So they drove over to Pasadena, Arcadia, exactly. It's like a suburb of Pasadena. And so they went to the door, and the mother came to the door. And the reason that they said that they wanted to see her daughter was that the grandmother was sick and she was dying, the mother's mother. So they went, and when they came to the door, the mother said that there's been, you know, serious illness in the family, and she'd like to see her daughter alone. Would you mind? So it was kind of an awkward moment, and Sri Kanta went back to his car out front and sat down, thought he would wait. And she said that, you know, just be, you know, have to see whatever mother wants to say for a few minutes. So while he was waiting in the car, her brother came out and very quickly opened the hood and pulled out all the distributor caps so that he couldn't drive away or drive anywhere. And this thought was very strange. So he looked up at the door of the house, and Sakula Priya started to come out, but as she was coming out, several arms and hands reached around in front of her and yanked her back inside, and she was screaming, "Stop, stop." And then they closed the door. And So then, somehow or other, I don't know if he got the car started, if he went down to a payphone, but he phoned the temple and told Ramachar what had happened. And that's when I heard about it, that so she'd be kidnapped. That was the idea. So we have to go there right away. So we drove, and he was sitting out there in the car to this place in Arcadia, and told us what had happened. So it was getting dark, and there was no lights on in the house, so we were trying to calculate what to do. She was staying over here at one of the buildings. But it was hours had gone by. It had been 2 or 3 hours since he saw that incident. And I think, what had happened is he'd either driven to a payphone or got his car working. I think he put back the distributor caps or walked to it and called us. When he came back, the house was dark and there was no activity. So what we didn't know what had happened. We thought they were in the house, but we weren't sure. What had really happened was that they had, while he was gone, they had put her in a van and held her there. Her brother and her brother's wife and her parents were all in this car, and they drove her way up towards Calistoga, which is up north near San Francisco. We didn't know that. So we talked to him, and he told us what happened, and he was really, really shot down, really unhappy. And so we went to the police, and we had to write a report. None of us had pencil and paper. We had to go to a store and get some paper and get some pens and some carbon paper because we wanted to keep everything we wrote. And then he wrote it, everything, 3 or 4 or 5 pages about the whole incident, what happened. So we went down to the Arcadia police station. Finally, it was about maybe 10 o'clock at night by the time we got all the paper, got everything written, and said that there was a kidnapping, and we wanted to report it, and here's the written report. You can have it, and we have copies of it. And the detectives were kind of, not the detectives, but the duty officers there, they were kind of sneering at us. Well, it's just a family thing, and if my kids looked like you, I'd tell them to just get lost. So they looked like they were going to do anything. We said, we didn't know what to do. So we went into a payphone in the police department. We called our lawyer, who was Barry Fisher at that time, and asked him what we should do. We were able to contact him, and he said, just tell them they have to take the paper, and then we'll go from there. They have to do it. So we kind of told them, we talked to a lawyer, and they had to take the paper, and this was an official complaint, and we wanted justice and so on. So they said, okay, well, we'll take it now. They took it. We made them sign it and everything. So then we came back. That was a Saturday night, and that morning there was a BBT meeting, and I was on the BBT board at that time, and we decided to, it was a regular weekly meeting. Somehow or other, that incident came up during the meeting at Srikanth used to work for the BBT. And we started thinking about what are we going to do? So this meeting, which was meant to be a BBT meeting from about 10 o'clock to 12, turned into a meeting to decide what we were going to do. And we ended up making posters, picket posters, and we decided that we were going to go out to that house in shifts and picket the front of the house. So we did that, and in that meeting, we brought in the posters and the artists and made up these posters, but the Slavits are torturing their daughter, where's Vedana Slavin, big signs, and that's all we did. So we drove out to that place, and several devotees drove out there, and then we talked to the same lawyer, and he told us that it would be okay to walk along the curb, because the lawn went right up to the curb, there was no sidewalk, but we would be within our legal rights. So we started this picketing at about noon, and then shifts just kept going, I don't know, till late at night, or maybe even all night. It was very, very late. And it was a very quiet Sunday morning out in Arcadia, California, in the suburb, and the neighbors were kind of getting together in little clusters and gazing at us, like really astonished. They couldn't figure out what we were up to, what was going on. They wouldn't get too close. They were always about 200 feet away. And a couple of times police cars drove by, Arcadia police, and they kind of looked at us and they just drove on, just kind of shaking their heads. About 4 o'clock, a plainclothes detective came up to us and he said the police are getting kind of worried about this, and they asked me to look into what's going on here. And they started asking us who we were and what we did, where we were from, and we started telling them all about the philosophy and the Bhagavad Gita and the temple and all this. And I said, after a while, he said, so then you're a religion. Yeah, we're a religion. Okay. So then he told us that he used to work in the Boston police force, and
he did something that they terminated him. They kicked him off the police force. So he sued the Boston police force. I think they have a reputation for being a, isn't it something, America's finest police force or something. Anyway, he sued him and he got back on the force. So then he came to Arcadia somehow or other. After that, he decided to transfer himself. And he told us this story about how he was kicked off and he was back on. And they were suspicious about us. He said, but I think you people are genuine and I think there's been a crime committed here and I'm going to find out what's going on. So we thought we'd won over this policeman. And in fact, we had. And then this whole thing became a big, because we were out there picketing, and we called the newspapers, we thought that something was going to happen. So Rameshwaran and I went to, that was Sunday. Sunday night, it was getting to be about 6, 7 o'clock. It was starting to get dark out, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. And then by the time we got into L.A., it was close to 10 or 11 o'clock. And we decided to go to the Los Angeles Times, and we went up to the main city desk. There were about 100 desks in there, 50 or 100 desks. And the duty guard didn't really want to let us in because it was the middle of the night as far as he was concerned. The place was shut down. Nobody was working. It was late at night. And there was one guy sitting there. So we went up and talked to him and told him the story. And he was very intrigued. So he said, well, this is kind of interesting. I think I'll write this up. Anyway, somehow he knew our lawyer. So he wrote it up, and just yesterday I got a copy of what he wrote. It was on the front page of the Los Angeles Times, and there's a picture of the devotees out there picketing. This was in October. What was it, October? Yeah, I was trying to think. It was the last day in October, something like that, last Sunday, 1976. So this is a picture. You can see it picketing in front of the lawn. The signs say, don't prosecute. Don't persecute Madonna Slavin for her religion. That's one. Free Madonna Slavin, says another one. Madonna Slavin is being persecuted for religious views, says another one. And are Slavins torturing their daughter for her religion? So that was what the sign said. So the headline says, and this is on the front page, this came out the Monday after the Sunday, two accused of kidnapping daughter from cultists. And they must have really hated us, yeah, cultists. So I'll just read a couple of lines and then finish the story. A father and mother accused by members of the Hare Krishna religious movement of kidnapping their 20-year-old daughter have been ordered to bring the young woman to court Tuesday morning. Superior Court Judge Perry Pack issued a writ of habeas corpus Sunday night, ordering Walter and Anna Slavin and their son Terrence to bring Madonna Slavin to his courtroom. The woman was lured to her parents' home in Arcadia Saturday morning and then held against her will, according to her fiancé, 27-year-old Edward Walford. Spokesman for the Hare Krishna movement said the woman had been associated with the group for 18 months and was employed within the movement. Then it ends by saying Lieutenant Larry Osler of the Arcadia Police said that there was no evidence of a kidnapping, but that an investigation had begun to determine if a crime was committed. Anyway, what happened was she was spirited away to Calistoga, and there were two professional deprogrammers who were hired. They came from Ohio, and they tried to convince her that Krishna consciousness was bogus and that she should give it up. And meanwhile, because of this LA Times article and other efforts that we kept up, and because we were in constant touch with our lawyer, this writ had been issued, and then every day for 3 or 4 days, the local TV channel came down here and did things like videotaped her room, talked to devotees, and it was on the news every night what was going to happen to Madonna Slavin. So a few days later, she I think it was maybe around Wednesday or Thursday, she somehow convinced these two deprogrammer girls that she should go out for a walk on her own. That she completely believed what they said. She was going to give up Krishna consciousness, but she had to go out and get some fresh air. So they foolishly let her go, and she broke away, and she ran and ran and ran out onto a highway, and she ran and ran and ran, and she noticed a police car was coming behind her. So she became very afraid that her relatives had called the police. They found out she escaped, and they were going to recapture her. But the police who caught up said, where are you going? What are you doing? She said, I'm running away. I've been kidnapped. And they didn't know anything about it, so they brought her into custody. And she told them the whole story, and they kind of sided with her, and they allowed her to call the temple here in New Dwarka. And she called and told everyone here that she had
broken free and that she was in police custody. And there was a big, everyone was, Haribol, you know, pull the priest free, she got away. And we immediately called all the lawyers and the media. And this detective, so the detective was very happy that that she had gotten away and found out there was actually some sort of a crime being committed. So they actually flew in a private plane, these Arcadia police and the detective, up to Calistoga, California, which is about 300 or 400 miles north of here, brought her back in the middle of the night to L.A., and we had her kept in police custody in L.A. so that it wouldn't look too culty to them. And the next day, she went to court because the body had been returned. That's what's supposed to happen in a writ of habeas corpus. And the courtroom was packed with people. And we had another meeting and decided with her that she was going to officially announce that she was getting married at the end of the courtroom session. So in the courtroom, the judge berated the parents like anything. Don't ever do this to your daughter. She has a right to do what she wants to do. And it was packed with anti-cult people and deprogrammers and all freedom fighters and all kinds of people. And when they came out of the courtroom, I remember being out there. It was like being on a football field when you're a 90-pound weakling and all these big guys in a gridiron are trouncing you and crashing into you. That's what the media were like. And they were jamming microphones into their faces. And they had they were sticking elbows in my ribs, I remember, they had TV cameras. And they said, well, what do you think? And they were both there, Sri and Sri Kanta. And they said, we're very happy to go back to New Dwarka to get our freedom. And we're going to get married next Sunday. And that just blew them away. So they went out to their car and they were being followed down this corridor of the courtroom, and it was just like being on a football field. Anyway, there was a big wedding. This temple was all very beautifully decorated. There's some pictures of it in the archives. I saw there was a beautiful mandap in the middle of the room. Wedding was conducted, and it was a big event. It was broadcast all over the state, maybe all over the country, I don't know. But it was a great victory for New Dwarka. It was the first time they'd ever experienced this so-called deprogramming phenomenon. And it was a big victory. And, of course, the thing has died down a lot now. But Kulapriya and Sri Kanta were photographed and videotaped, and then their wedding pictures were sent all over. So it was a great victory for Rukmini Dwarkish and for New Dwarka. And the beginning of the end of the deprogramming phenomenon. So, that's it. Finished on time. Any comments or questions? Yes, Narala.
Sometimes I've heard that some devotees say that our beings are not originally Rukmini Dwarkish, but they were actually Rukmini Dwarkish.
I don't know the background. I don't know, maybe somebody else does. I wasn't here at that time. I know they were sculpted in Jaipur, and they are on the cover of the Bhagavatam. So I think that the London deities were on the cover of the second canon, the second part, for a while until it was merged right into one volume. And I think Prabhupada asked the devotees, well, who do you like better? Radha Lalaneshwar Rukmini Dwarkish. I mean, he asked me once, and I said, well, there's no comparison. Very diplomatic answer. But very beautiful deities are. But of course, all deities are Radha Krishna deities. I mean, all Rukmini is the incarnation of Radha and Sita and so on. But I don't know the history of how they were named. I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows. Yes? You know?
I was here at that time, uh-huh. And I don't remember there being a confusion amongst the devotees about the name being given to the deities, and worship was going on first class, and there was no confusion. And if that would have been the case, I think there would have been some, we would have known about it. Mm. All I remember is that the deities were given their names and worship as Prabhupada was naming all the deities around the society, and then they were looking at him.
Yeah, that's very good to know.
I believe there was a couple of letters that Prabhupada was drawing in reference to deprogramming. He called them deprogramming. I mean, there is a controversy about this a couple of years ago. Looked into our archives, and we did find some letters which were Prabhupada called the deities deprogramming or Kadish. There was some concern that Prabhupada never recognized that name. From the letter, we concluded that Srila Prabhupada did call them deprogramming because he asked them.
Mm-hmm. thanks. Yeah, I know in Delhi they have that Radha Partisarthi deed, and sometimes people would challenge, well, you know, Partisarthi was never with, the chariot driver was never with Radharani, he was always with Arjuna, so how can that be? And I looked this up once, and Prabhupada, because someone asked him that, he said, you mean to say that Krishna in his white incarnation can't be in Partisarthi? You know, they were questioning why he, you know, has these different colors and why he's Partisarthi and so on and so forth. So it's very nice to be back here and see New Dwarka is still on the leading edge 30 years later. So, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.